Hello, everybody. It's Eddie. Glad you are with us tonight. Just me and you, Mr. Matt.
Woohoo!
Put Mr. Mangan on an airplane going back to Texas tonight.
Where are you at right now?
I'm in Kansas City.
Kansas City. Well,
so, you're in what town?
I'm in Denver, Colorado. I heard
so,
they have an event or
something. Is that a semi-pro team that plays up there?
I think they're a Canadian Football League or something that they transported down here. I don't know.
I started to have Dwayne calling tonight. He lives in Charlotte, you know.
Sure, he would have had.
Dwayne actually is not. Well, he's adopted many teams before he got there, so I don't know that he's like over the top with it. I didn't think your team could win, Matt.
I misjudged
them. I thought Carolina was going to put it on them, but.
I'll promise you this: we watched it at.
Wrong.
Hmm.
I was wrong.
Well, we watched it at an old theater yesterday, and I'll put it to you this way: until about the middle of the fourth quarter, everybody was waiting for the bomb to drop, and then it kind of just relaxed after that. But it was there weren't many Denver Broncos that were completely convinced that it was going to happen either. So the fans anyway. So.
All right. Well. Congratulations, Denver Broncos, world champions. Peyton Manning has Mississippi roots like you and I.
Yeah.
And glad to see it. Carolina is a worthy opponent. So there you go. That's all I got to say about that. Forrest Gump said. Let's roll with it, Mr. Matt.
All right. Let's see. T, actually, I believe, let's see. I'm not sure if he's able to. I think he said something about not being able to be on the call and was going to listen later. But if you are on here, T, go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll go ahead and put you on. But there was just a couple of questions, and it's some kind of surface stuff. He had initially, and this is, I kind of wanted to bring this up. He had initially asked about going through the entire contract, but like everybody else, we have done that a couple times from the appreciation event to once on this call. And, I did direct him to the member site where he could actually go through the videos and look through how to fill out the partial contract and which one to fill out. So, so the first question is missing on here. So I've already kind of responded to him, but, and just kind of the basics on this is when selling a partial, what type of form does he need to fill out so his investor would know that the case, that in case the loan is to pay off early, that he, the investor would still be reimbursed.
Well, the form, there's several things. There's two agreements, right? There's a buy agreement when you're the buyer, and there's a sell agreement when you're the seller. Okay? So, specifically, you know, and as you said, Matt, there's some many lessons. There's some details about it. So the generic question and filling out the form, you got to make sure you got the right form. So you want the form that's the sell form, not the buy form. Okay. So kind of a tag to that first question is we need to fill it out so the investor will know in case of a loan. Of an early payoff, what does it say? Reimburse
that they would be be paid. So if it paid off early.
We call it an entitlement schedule. So that's what we call it. And, you know, that's the amortization that obviously is the graph that everybody's seen us use a lot. And it does refer to that in the agreement. Make sure you get the right agreement. You need to read through it. You need to follow it. You know, if you haven't done that, you just got to go burn the midnight oil and go do it. I mean, even somebody like me that don't like doing all that junk, I've had to do it. So that's kind of the first step.
Okay.
So you're asking me specific questions here. In case of a default, what provision? Well, read the agreement. Who pays the servicer for the partial period? It is the way we sell loans, the guy who owns the partial pays the servicer agreement. You can agree to whatever you want to, but that's not what we agree to. Do we have some sample postcards or marketing materials to advertise selling partials? I'm telling you, don't do that. Advertising selling partials don't sound like a good deal to me. I think that's why we're trying to create the meetup concept and dealing with investors and at some point. But advertising selling a note is not going to be advisable, period. And the reason that we're particular about that is because of related security laws. So, Matt, you've pulled up the membership site, purchase agreements, right?
Correct, and that's under the train tab, performing note materials. When you click on that, if you scroll all the way down to the very bottom, that left side, you'll have the buy partial agreement and the sell partial agreement that you'll be able to download. So they're on that left side of the member site page.
Okay.
The other thing, and this ties in with this, and it's not, I didn't put it on this because I just thought it would be a good way to transition into this, is we had a question come in and they were talking about whenever you are talking to someone or offering a partial to an investor, they were saying that the servicing payments would then change the yield that you're offering on that payment. And I thought that it would be, and this was asked of Joe, and I kind of told her this would be actually a conversation that you should probably say, because you have a good way of explaining why that yield, or, you know, the cost is what it is, kind of thing.
So Matt, if I sell you a partial and you're getting a 10% return, and out of that money you're paying the servicing fee, you're getting a 10% gross yield, not a 10% net yield. And it's just how you do it. You know? What rule book says you got to go do it the other way?
And I think you said it really good one time when you were talking about tickets, buying a ticket from the airline.
Yeah. What's up with that? Huh? I buy a ticket, now all of a sudden they're going to charge me the tax on it, and they're going to charge me for luggage, and, you know, then I want to sit in the exact zero seat, and they charge me more for that? Yeah, that's just how it works. So you guys have to be convinced that it's reasonable and acceptable for the investor to pay the servicing fee for the partial they bought. And yes, effectively it reduces their net yield out of it. And if you get freaked out about it or you don't think you can sell it, guess what? You're right. You won. Nope. The investor won. Because you're fixing to roll over and sell it for less money. And I'm just telling you, don't do it. Martha doesn't sell any loan and pay servicing fee on the partial. We ain't never done it, not in 35 years, and we're not fixing to start. So if you're going to buy a partial from us, that's the way it's going to be. It's an industry standard. It's acceptable, and you just got to live with it. So that's you, but you got to believe it. That's why I'm saying that, right, Matt? If you don't believe it, you can't sell it.
Right.
And you got to believe it's reasonable, and it is reasonable. You know?
Absolutely.
I checked in this hotel room tonight, and then I found out they wanted to charge me for buying a meal.
And probably internet if you weren't a member.
Yeah, unless I had this magnum status like I have. Trust me, I'm not bragging about my status. That means I've gone too much. Yeah. Oh. All right, Matthew, let's move on. Here's what I'm going to say to you. I'm not dare telling anybody to go send partials or postcards to go sell a partial. I'm not saying that. Secondly, I think you got to go poke in a little bit and read the agreement and figure out what you got. Yeah, Ryan, I'm talking to you, boy. Ryan's up there in that big old house in Colorado now. He's what else? All right. Let's go with number two, Matt.
Okay, same issue. He's got a we've got a couple of them that are wanting to listen to it a little bit later. And this Sergio was actually wanting a little bit of clarification. And he was talking about wanting to bring up a quick question about land contracts or notes. He's saying that the in Ohio, the limit is 8% as far as your interest rate that you're able to place on a note. And it's the difference between allowable interest and actual to be applied towards principal. He gave us the Ohio revised statute, which
yeah, limits. I'm going to read that tonight.
Yeah, it's some bedtime reading.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the limit only applies to owner occupants, but that's directly on point. It says So I guess what he's kind of asking is, how does that affect loans that, number one, how does it affect the loans that he's seeing that are coming out of Ohio that are at a higher interest rate, and how does that not apply to that?
The companies that help us create seller finance notes, like Halo has done and National Asset Advisors, are have law firms that they've paid a lot of money to, and I'm pretty sure that they are doing it in a compliant manner, and I'm not going to give myself brain damage tonight trying to figure out what that is. You know, so I don't know the answer to it, Sergio. I would tell you that, you know, it's my guess is that I know Sergio happens to be an attorney, but he's not necessarily a specialist in this area, and the attorneys that these guys have used are specialists in these areas. And I can tell you that both Halo and National Asset Advisors have spent crazy money with specialist attorney in these areas. So if you have a specific question or a specific thing and so you're ready to buy an asset, then we'll have the conversation. If it's just a generic question, then I think these guys have good counsel, and I think they're probably creating compliant loans. Right. Damn, I'm tough tonight, aren't I?
So basically, the answer is it doesn't affect the marketability.
I'm not going to give myself brain damage, go reading a statute tonight. I'm just telling you that these companies that do this have, you know, these guys that create hundreds of loans a year have counsel, and they do it in a compliant manner. And, I don't have all the information, but you know, I'm not worried about it.
All right.
That's one of them kind of questions that we don't filter the questions. Somebody ask a stinger a question, we'll throw it up there.
Just check it.
You know?
All right, so Jackie Lamberson has our next question up.
My God, Jackie, Jackie, Jackie.
You feeling tough still, Larry?
Oh, my God, girl.
Well, darling,
I'm gonna get you some counseling. I'm going to get you some counseling over all this.
Okay, good. I need it.
You are very meticulous. All right, so you got a loan, and it's got a balloon on it. Is that right?
That is correct. I've made my first offer. I gave him three choices, and this is the deal from the original note.
All right, so let me pull out my HP 12C on my iPhone here. I'm going to get it turned sideways if I can, and I'm going to run this calculation. So there's 46 months to the balloon.
Correct.
The balloon's 462.
I have 962, but I'll take your number.
104,962. I'm sorry, you're correct. All right. So I'm gonna put 46 in the number.
Well,
I'm just checking it. 104,962 in future value. I'm gonna put 671 in present in the current payment. What kind of yield are you trying to buy it at?
9.5.
Really, you're gonna buy a loan at 9.5 yield?
Well, 12. I'll go with the first round. I did at 12.
Okay. Well, then let's go with 12.
Okay.
You're gonna buy a retail note at 9.5. So 12,000 is 91,056. So I have 46 in the number. 12% divided by 12, which is 1 in the interest. I have 671 in the payment, and I have 104,962 in future value, and I ask it what's the present value.
Okay. Well, all right.
What did the house sell for?
I apologize. I didn't understand the question.
It's okay. What did the house sell for?
Oh, it sold for $139,000. It had a down payment of $15,000. The original principal was $124,000.
And they think it's worth 160.
I've had that verified on site by people who live in the same town that are in the real estate business.
Okay. It's 57%. If you bought it at a 12, 57% investment to value. So is this a retail note? You're buying it direct?
Yes, it's a result of my direct mail that I put out, and it's really the first one I've been able to quote, and I had calculated the full value of it to offer a whole, and then I was coming up with I gave him an offer on the partials. I heard you say that you would buy half an unpaid balance for the amount of the unpaid balance. And so I've been fiddling with that to see what that was like.
Jackie, here's what I said. Half of the term for half of the principal. That math doesn't work on a balloon.
Okay.
Okay. It only works with a level amortizing note.
Okay. It's half of the term for half of the balance.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that won't work on this deal because it's got a balloon on it.
All right, I understand.
Okay. Here's my issue with the balloon. Okay. 46 months, the balloon's due.
Correct.
Where are they going to refi and pay you off?
Where?
Yeah.
Well, I'm this is a yeah, the story behind this is that it's a estate where the current holder of the note are two sons of a deceased father who was the one who gave the note. The interesting thing about this note is that it was sold to a LLC with, and it has tenants in it right now. The man who created the note and the deed of trust is the owner of the LLC, which is very wonderful. And but I was trying to figure out the...
Go back to your math sheet, Matt, please. All right, so the loan balance, yeah, I'm just curious, why would you even be running a 9.5 yield?
Do you want me, the answer to that question is I put this into Colonial to see what they would buy it for as a offer, and the yield I calculated that I was given was 9.5 from Colonial, so that's why I was looking at 9.5.
Well, let me tell you something. That is not what we buy notes like that for. So I don't know what if we screwed up or if whatever, but we darn sure wouldn't be buying a note at a 9.5 yield.
Well, I asked for the whole note, a bid for the whole note.
All right, well, a 9.5 yield on that math that you have there. We're going to have to go back to that other sheet, Matt. The one that has a balloon amount, I don't remember what it was. Oh, here it is, okay, 671. Pet balloon is 104, 962. A 9.5 yield would have the investor paying shoot. I'm doing this on my iPhone, so sometimes it don't work as good as the calculator. The 98,815. So here's what I would do. Okay.
Okay.
There's two sons that inherited this note, right?
Correct. One of them is a bankruptcy lawyer in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, so he understands workouts in the environment. I don't have to do the water tower explanation with him.
Okay. Well, the water tower explanation doesn't work near as well on a 46-month balloon.
Exactly.
The balance is 117.
Correct.
I'd take a swing at it, buying it about 72 to 75 cents on the dollar.
All righty.
You can quote them a partial. You can quote the payments up to the balloon and part of the balloon. You know, you can quote payments up to the balloon. The balloon's 104. Payments up to the balloon and 50,000 of the balloon. But I'm going to tell you right now, they ain't going to sell a partial.
Well, I totally misunderstood what you said about the half balance. But I calculated, I did it wrong. But when I calculated the offer that I would have done incorrect to what you said, I was making a 11.6% return. So maybe I misunderstood it, but it seemed to have worked.
Jackie, I'm just going to tell you, you don't do direct mail to make that kind of a return on a partial. It's just, that's just thin.
Okay.
I mean, you're doing direct mail. That's like buying wholesale houses. You don't go buy wholesale houses for 85 cents on the dollar. Now, if somebody's out spending the money and the time and the energy to do it, and you're just an investor buying houses people are flipping to you, maybe you buy a house for 80 or 85 cents. But you don't go do direct mail and go do comb through the 15 deals to go find the one that'll work to go make that kind of return.
Okay, I agree.
I mean, we sell notes to students where we've scrubbed them and done all the work, and we sell notes at higher than 11.5 yield every day. Why would you go do direct mail to earn that?
Well, Eddie, you know how you said that when if you want to learn the note business, buy a note? Well, I'm trying to learn the brokering part of it, and this is my entry. I'm struggling to learn the nuances, and I appreciate your help with that.
All right, so let me just tell you this. I'm about 90% into the trade and the emotion and 10% into the numbers, okay? Because I can tell you right now, you got some old lawyer, and he's going to tell you how smart he is and ha-ha-ha and, you know, whatever. And at the end of the day, it's like, you know, they're busting up $375 a month, and that's what I'm going to focus on. You and your brother are busting up $375 a month. Okay, and they inherited a note, they ain't got no skin in the game, and they sound like sellers to me. And I don't even care what the yield is. Just pick it, you know. I mean, I'm going to buy the note for just 72, 75 cents on the dollar. So you're trying to, like, razor sharp the yield, and I'm just like, I'm focused on trying to figure out whether they'll sell it or not. When you tell me and it's in the state, the alarm goes off. Opportunity. You see what I'm saying?
I agree.
The deal maker in me overrides the calculator man in me.
But you still have to give them an offer, and.
I know, but go run that. Go offer them. Just take the number I gave you. Let's play with that just a second. Let's see, 671 is the payment, 104,900 is the balloon, 46 months away, and I'm going to buy this note for how much, 88,000? Is that about what I'm going to pay at 75 cents?
Well, I had offered them 75,000, and that's 64 cents.
What'd they say?
Well, I haven't gotten an answer from him yet, but I don't want him to call me up tomorrow and say,
Let me tell you something. If you can buy that note for 65 cents, you don't need a calculator. You're good.
All right.
I ain't gonna tell you what the yield is if you can get it bought at 65 cents. You're good.
All right.
You see what I'm saying? It's like, now, do I think they're going to sell for that? I didn't say that. But what are you going to do when they say no?
Well, I gave him three offers. I told him I would buy the, I call it pre-balloon, payments for something like the $21,500. And I would, and I know this is wrong now, but I didn't then. I told him I would buy half of the unpaid balance for half of the unpaid balance. I would buy $58,830 and then pay him off either when the balloon payment came back or, you know, whenever I got control of the money.
Yeah, that math's not gonna work, son.
Okay.
Because that program is designed where you're buying like a 30-year note. So if you had $100,000 8% note amortized over 30 years, and I gave him 50,000 to buy 15 years, I just know without even pulling up my calculator, that's a 16% yield on a $180,000 partial. But that math is not going to work the same when you have an early maturity.
All righty.
So let's play this out. Okay.
I'm with you.
You offered him $65,000. How many dollars is that?
No, I offered him. I had 65 three.
How much you offer him? The first offer. Quick, forget the partials.
Well, wait. I'm gonna bring it. Let me just bring up my letter to him because I can do it real quick. And I can tell you exactly. I don't want to misquote myself. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I apologize.
Okay, that's all right.
Just takes a second here to get it. Okay. Sorry, I'm still looking for it.
All right, hold on a minute. I'll do it. 117. You offered him 65 cents?
Wait a minute. I'll get it. I'm just a little nervous here. I'm sorry.
117.
Letters.
677. Enter. 65%. Is you offered him 74,490?
Yes. I offered him three things. I offered him the entire note.
I'm not, the partials are irrelevant to me.
Okay. I offered him 74,125 for the whole note.
That's a 20% yield. If he goes for that, you're gonna, subject to due diligence, you're gonna be good, really good, really really good. Okay. Now, what are you gonna do when he calls back and says no?
Well, I offered him two other things.
Estates don't sell partials.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I've done this thousands of times. I can tell you right now, they ain't gonna go for the partial.
Well, I guess we tell them, I don't know what to tell them except that's my best offer and let him think about it for a while.
Okay, what kind of negotiation tactic would you say that is?
That's not a good one. That's take it or leave it.
Okay, so that's why we're talking about it. Do you see what I'm doing? Like, I'm pulling you away. You're great with the numbers and the spreadsheets. You're a rock star. Okay, I got all that. Okay, but that doesn't make you successful in the negotiations. I'm talking about where the rubber meets the road. What do we do to get the guy to say yes? Okay, you put an answer in the spreadsheet, and you looked at the number, and you told him what the number was, and then the guy goes, oh, well, that's not enough. Okay?
Well,
if he's going to sell it to you, he's probably not going to call back and say immediately yes.
Correct.
That's been my life experience.
He's received $17,500 approximately already for this note.
I'm going to tell you something. I never have played that negotiation tactic. I've heard a million people do that. But all they're going to do is play it back to you and say, well, you're going to collect this if you collect 46 payments plus the balloon. You see, I mean, that, in other words, it's too easy for somebody to flip it around on you.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, sell my note, Eddie. sell my offer, Eddie.
You made a heck of a run at them, okay? And as sure as I say that they'll call you back and say no, they'll call you back and say yes, so I hope I'm wrong, okay? Because if you do, you made a heck of a deal. Just the odds are they're going to call back with some kind of counter proposal or some kind of this or that. And what I would say to you is you got to get to the emotion of the deal. I will tell you this. The $671 bucks a month, isn't that what it is? If I'm looking at it right.
Yes, sir.
That is about 50, that's about earning about 5% interest based on the balloon. So there's definitely an issue with the cash on cash return versus the balloon amount. But let's get past that. Okay? What happens if you don't sell the note?
Well, he continues he's self-servicing it. He's going to continue servicing it for his brother. And he's not – his sons, he wanted to sell it. His goal to sell it was to cash out and be able to put investments for each of their sons, and a different investment for each of their sons.
Okay. Well, so what happens if they don't sell it? Tell me what happens.
They continue servicing it, and
they don't make, and they don't make the investments for the sons.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Do you see how I took that from math to emotion?
Yes, sir.
That's what you got to do.
I will give it my best shot, Eddie.
Here's what you're fretting. You're fretting that this old guy's an attorney, and he's a bankruptcy attorney, and I'm sure he's a smart guy, but he don't know what this note's worth, and he don't know how to run that calculator, and you got to be like, the thing that I'm kind of getting in your head is I'm seeing you run the 9.5 yield, okay?
Exactly.
And I don't know whether you thought somebody else was going to buy it at a 9.5 yield, or you were just willing to renegotiate and buy it at a 9.5 yield.
Well, maybe my spreads are just totally bonker, but I have on the screen, as you can see it, that I'm buying it for 64 cents on the dollar, which you say is a 20% yield, and that's not what I'm calculating.
Well, all I did was take a financial calculator, and I just put in the numbers that I told you.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's how you calculate a balloon. The problem in selling the note with a balloon note is the investor's got to have some confidence the balloon's going to be paid.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I thought about that. My sources tell me that the borrower is not as stellar as the seller would like me to believe, and that the word failing was used as his business experience. And so I sat back and I thought, I know the town well. I've had the property. I haven't done a valuation on it, but I've had a local verification of its value. And if I took this and got to the point where it got to balloon time and the borrower would not pay, you know, couldn't pay it, and I'm not going to, you know, refinance it, would I be willing to take that property back? And the answer, I thought the answer was yes. And so I
think at the 78 grand or whatever it is you're offering for the whole note, uh-huh, is the answer is based on if it's worth a 160, then the answer is yes.
Exactly.
Okay, then you're buying a performing note at a non-performing note price.
Okay.
You've got a shell entity, an LLC, that bought a rental property. When you say your sources and all that stuff, I don't know what that means. I very seldom I had ever had any inside information when I did direct mail, because it's just kind of random who calls you. But
right.
But,
well, I targeted.
You know, the bottom line is.
Yeah.
You targeted a market that you knew something about.
I targeted a market that I knew people in the market that were real estate professionals, real estate attorneys, et cetera, that if I had a question about the market, I could ask it.
Okay. Well, still, if you mail 100 letters, one person's going to call you. So it would be a fluke if you just happened to have somebody that called you that knew somebody that you knew, right? I mean, it's not
I know.
impossible, but the odds are way low.
It's a fluke, I know that, but that's what
Okay,
happened.
so what you're telling me now is that there's some people that claim that they know the deal, and they're saying the guy's not working out. So the only way that tells me is it sounds to me like his pay history slipping.
Well, I haven't seen the pay history yet. I've told the man, I've given him the first quotes, and he
All right,
understands that there's another level of due diligence coming.
okay, let me tell you why that's important. Because now you just gave me a whole different line of questioning to start going with the negotiation.
All right.
You got that?
Yes, sir.
Now you're giving me some pain to drill in on.
Okay, I'm.
So you're giving the guy a price and he calls you back, okay? And he says, not enough money. What are we going to say?
Well, what are you going to do if you don't sell it? Gently.
Right.
And
Well, I mean,
then.
so let's mock call this out a little bit. You're the seller and I'm the buyer,
All
okay?
righty.
So you call back and you say, Eddie, looked at your offer. It's just not enough money.
Right. My brother won't take this. I couldn't even think about it because my brother said no. He's co-executor and I have to have his agreement.
Okay. Well, I mean, you certainly, you guys need to make what's a good choice for you, right? And I guess it's always a question of if it's not the right thing for you and you don't sell it, then obviously you're gonna be in a spot where you're gonna keep it, right?
Yep, I guess that's the only thing we can do.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, Jackie. If you keep the note, in your mind, I get you're working with your brother, right? In your mind, is that where you need to be?
Well, Eddie, we've been thinking about taking some of this money and investing it in other places for his sons and my sons. We really don't go up to the mountains of North Carolina very much anymore.
So I guess that's what I'm saying. If you, all things being equal, is this where, if is it keeping the note? Is it where you feel like you need to be, or you feel like you need to sell it?
Well, if we could get a good price, a reasonable price on it, we would sell it.
Define reasonable price, Jackie.
Well, they owe 117 and the unpaid balance is coming up pretty soon in the near future.
4 years.
4 years. We were probably looking at wanting to get 95 for it, 98 for it.
Well, let me ask you a question, Jackie. If I were the borrower and I was going to have bought this house, could I have gone the money and borrowed money at the bank with a LLC and no personal guarantee?
Well, Eddie, you're right. It has been a little bothersome that that the person that wrote the deed of trust in the note was the same person that was the borrower, and it also is a little bothersome that there's no personal guarantee and there's no prepayment penalty and there's no due on sale clause on this particular note. That makes us a little uncomfortable, but he has paid me well. In fact, he pays a year in advance sometime. So, and that
Okay,
he bought.
whoa, whoa, whoa. Did he really say that?
Yeah, he told me that he had received a
Well,
full
wait a
year.
minute. That's a pretty significant piece of information there.
Sorry. No, he did tell me the guy prepaid him a year
Well,
once.
that's why I'm saying that when you say your sources say it didn't work out, I'm like, Tell me why that's true. In other words, it's like, what's that mean? These guys say it didn't work out. Wait a minute, the dude pays in advance, a year in advance?
Well, my sources go to Rotary with this guy, and they know him pretty well, and they're both in the same profession, which is the legal. They're both attorneys. So I'm sitting and listening to the critique.
All right. Well, I don't know whether that's all true or not, or it's just what I call country club talk, where everybody's trying to sound like, you know, they got the answer and nobody else does. Sometimes attorneys do that, you know?
Right. I'm not trying to be difficult, Eddie. I'm just really
I'm trying to get to the trade. I get that, you know, getting to the math is good, but I think this old boy's going to call you back and want more money.
Okay.
And I think you're going to have to get to the point where you say, why is it worth more money?
Okay.
It's a non-bankable deal. You're a bankruptcy attorney. You know the routine. It's a private investor deal. Private investor deals, you know, and, you know, it's non-owner occupied. It's they don't, you know, the guy didn't, in all truthfulness, he didn't have any emotional equity in the deal. You know, if his tenant works out and his deal works out and he can refinance, he pays. The balloon comes due in 4 years and the bank won't make you the money. You think the old boy's going to sell his house so he can pay you this loan off for you? I'm just asking, do you think he's going to do that?
Okay.
Those are the type of things I would drill in on.
All righty. I will do that. He has not called me back, but I'm expecting him to call back sometime late this week.
I just don't want to get you all framed up on the yield, because you're going to focus on the yield and the formula and not the deal.
No, Eddie, I showed you that. I'm now trying my best to focus on the deal and the
that's what I'm saying. That's what my mission was tonight. It's not that I'm trying to hide the yield from you. I'm just saying to you that I wanted to focus on what was going to make this guy say yes. And quite honestly, you know, this old boy's pretty smart, right? I mean, if he smelled blood and you were quick to say, well, how much do you want? Let me raise the price. He's not a dummy. I mean, he'll let you dance. And also, when you settle lawsuits, attorneys like make up crazy stuff. Like, they'll say, oh, okay, we'll settle for 50 grand. They know the lawyer's going to come back and offer 150 grand. They know they're going to end up settling on 88,000, right? You're going to have to be prepared to kind of show him this is not the same. This is not a, you know, I didn't offer you 50% of what it's worth to, you know, to go trade my way up. You see what I'm saying? And you kind of got to be mentally prepared for that, and you got to be mentally prepared for kind of the culture and where he comes from.
Exactly.
And those are the things that are pretty critical to, you know, how this works, and I'm just boxing around with you a little bit because that's what he's going to do.
I'm fine, Eddie. I'm happy to actually get off of the yields and the spreadsheets and get into the negotiating.
Yeah. So I think, you know, let's just wait and see what he does.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you this. You know, the person that gets in a hurry first loses.
I agree.
So just take your time. Did you send him a letter with a quote?
Yes, sir.
So when he says, I want more money, you're going to have to get back to why is it worth more money? If I'm going to go to my underwriter and get them to raise the price, I got to tell them something.
Okay.
It's worth more money because my client wants more money.
All righty.
In other words, you got to get him fighting his head a little bit.
I agree.
And worked out good, Jackie, because I probably wouldn't have had the nerve to quote that price, but that seemed like a fair market price to you, and I'm glad it did. And that's not like, I mean, I'm just saying, if you're a beginner and you haven't done this forever like me, you don't know. It's kind of like I walk in, I don't know what something at the store is supposed to cost. I just look at the price. And so I'm just saying it kind of worked out good because you probably quoted him a $10,000 less than I would have quoted him.
Okay.
And I like it. Let's just stick on that, see where the old boy goes. If
I like.
he's if he's if he calls back and he's dancing. Now let me ask you a question. Let's just say he wants $10,000 more. Okay? Let me ask you a question. Why is it worth $10,000 more? Because he wants it?
Well, exactly.
Okay, so the reason I said that is I'm trying to get you in the frame of mind that you're not like, you found that you've made a good offer, right? And if you can get close to that, you're good, right? Now I'm like getting in your head a little bit going, well, wait a minute. He just decides he wants $10,000 or $15,000 more, which you'd probably be okay with paying. I'm just saying, why would you do it?
I don't have to make the deal. The interesting thing is
That's
that I'm.
what I want. That's what I want you to lay your head in the pillow tonight and think. I don't have to make this deal.
Oh, I'm there, Eddie. I don't need to make a bad deal. I need to make a good
No.
deal.
You got room to raise the price and still make a good deal. I'm just saying to you that I'm trying to get you. You remember Hudson when he played all that high school football? Hudson would play kids that were very, very athletic. The one thing I can tell you about Hudson is they could not intimidate him. And so it's a frame of mind. The coach has got Hudson in a mindset of okay, he may be 4 inches taller than you, or he may outweigh you by 30 pounds, but that don't matter. And that, in other words, I'm just saying that's the frame of mind I want to, as your coach, I'm trying to get you in that frame of mind.
I'll
Don't
be
roll
there.
over just because he wants you to. Now, you may
Okay.
have to raise the price a little bit, okay? But when you have to raise the price, I want you to raise the price for one of two reasons. Okay? You
Okay.
raise the price because you've wallowed around with them for a month and they're just not going to sell to you otherwise.
Okay.
Or number two, somebody has a legitimate offer on the table and is offering more.
Okay. Okay. May I ask a question?
Sure.
I calculated on that $75,000 offer for 117.64 cents on the dollar. I took my offer and divided it by the unpaid balance that he was selling me. That is the correct way to calculate that, yes?
Yeah, it's just 65 cents on the dollar. Yeah.
All right. Okay, good. I just wanted, you know.
Yep.
Then I must speak. Okay, that's fine. That's good.
So, yeah, you got a live wire here. Estates are like light me up. I'm telling you, estates are way easier to get somebody to sell than otherwise.
Well, thank you, Eddie. I can't wait for him to call now.
All right. Good to talk to you, Jackie.
Nice to talk to you.
All right. Bye-bye. Right, Mr. Matt, what we got, brother?
All right. So, double check. Bob. Okay. Pull in Bob real quick. Bob, you go ahead. Bob? Bob, if you want to check your mic real quick, you are unmuted on my end. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and while he's messing around with that, Bob, if you need to call in to get in, please do so, so we can get your thoughts on that. So, he's looking for a workout, for recommended, some exit strategies for this, asset that he's trying to create a note on, I believe. And basically, it was an REO. It's got about 19 in it to get it rent ready. So they own it free and clear. It rents for about $975. At some point here in the future, it probably will need a roof, but not right now. It's got $133 in taxes, and it gets about $97.50 a month for property. It's got a little bit of a crime issue. But the, it looks like the houses are well kept in the area. So basically what he's wanting to know is it going to be best for him to number one, continue renting the property, number two, sell it to an investor with a 50-50 model, or sell it as an owner occupant with financing, possibly the current renter. Says that the MLS in the area about 55,000. Says he's getting a value of about 56,000, and the quote on that's fairly confident. So and he's saying that selling it on with a realtor just seems like a bad idea because then you have the realtor fees. He's just wanting to know what you suggest would be the best course of action for exiting out of this property and getting the most profit out of it.
Well, I think the 50-50 model is a matter of, is it stable enough for a tenant and the neighborhood for an investor to buy it? So that's when you really get right down to it, that's going to be the question at hand. And you know, I would order a rent fax, own it first thing, and just see where it's going to land at. I had a meeting most of the day with the whole back office vendor group for the 50-50 model. And, you know, back to the basics, 101. First thing you do, does the house fit the neighborhood? How are we going to figure it out? Order a rent fax. Okay. Number two, once it fits that, then I can reverse engineer it and figure out where I need to be. So, noting your way out of it is an obvious conclusion to me. Selling it to a investor as a turnkey loaded rental or selling it to a consumer is, I don't know yet, because my first part of the equation is, let's look at a rent fax and see where it's going to come in. What's an investor's concern when they buy it, right? What's the investor going to ask? Well, first of all, they're going to ask about the neighborhood. They're going to ask about the stability of the tenant, the long-term management company, and then they're going to ask about, you know, is the house stable? In other words, I'm not going to have to go drop a whole bunch of money into it and fix it next year after, you know, everything's broke down. So it's a great question. I'm just saying, in my mind, that's kind of the checklist that I would go through. So I don't think I can answer the question quite yet, because I don't know if it's good enough to be a turnkey property. That's what I'm saying. I hope that's.
So your suggestion is to get a rent fax and bring it back to the call.
I cannot make any reasonable determination on the 50-50 model without starting through the model of first things first, a rent fax.
All right. Well, since he's...
And then we can back into it and see about the other. So it's a very good question, and we're, you know, I mean, if this is what we cover this stuff for. So it's a very fair question. I just don't, in other words, there's a threshold that says it has to be a, you know, you can sell a lower end house to a consumer than you can a 50-50 model as a loaded turnkey to an investor. That make sense? All right.
All right, just a couple more questions. So let's and this he kind of put in some of the notes and the what the property looked like in the area and then what the house looks like itself. So it's a good looking house. But yeah, first thing I'll email back to him, let him know that this was owned, and then also kind of let him know that you had said to do a rent facts double check, and then let's bring it back to the call and see what we can find out. So all right, so we'll bring in Ms. Barb next. Ms. Barbara? Barbara? We've got two. Yes, we
can hear
hear
me?
you.
Okay. Yes, we are in the process of doing three owner finance sales of properties. And the question came up in our mind as to how protected we are in case of any liability issue, someone gets hurt on the property. If the deed is unrecorded and an attorney is going to look for someone to sue, are we protected by recording the contract for deed? And didn't I understand from other conversations that most of the time we don't record the contract for deed? So just ease my mind on the liability issue, please.
I am not an attorney. Okay?
Yep, got it.
I'm just telling you, if Eddie and Martha owned this house, we would sell it on a land contract. We would not record the land contract unless the state specifically required it. And I've been doing it for 35 years, and knock on 1,000 pounds of wood, I ain't never been sued yet.
Okay.
My attorney tells me that I have what is referred to as a lien holder's interest in the property.
Okay. So if somebody is looking for someone to sue, they would find your name though.
You know, I'm just telling you right now that you know, people get all freaked out over asset protection and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just saying to you, after all these years, you know, the reality is different than the perception.
Okay.
And you have a lien holder's interest in the property, and I think you're fine. Now, can I tell you what to do? Nope, I can't. You know, could you roll it over into a land trust and sell it inside a land trust? Yes. Let me ask you a different question. Are you selling to consumers?
Yes.
Have you owner financed any other properties in the last 12 months?
No.
Okay, well, so you're right on the edge of the next property you do, you're going to have to be compliant with Dodd-Frank. You realize that, right?
I'm doing all three of these, even though they're the first three we've ever done. I'm doing them all with NAA. I'm getting the blessing
Okay.
of an RMLO on every one of them.
Okay, well, cool. I think that's a great idea.
Keep going.
Well, you know, my layman's opinion is you have a inordinately low tolerable level of risk in any kind of a land contract situation. Do not record it. Quit worrying about all that. Don't go screw up your right to just terminate because you're worried about some liability.
Okay.
If you decide to roll it into a land trust and sell it inside a land trust, that's fine.
We are actually going to do one of them that way because it is a piece of land in Florida.
No, that has nothing to do with it. You understand that, right?
Yeah,
That's
but it's
just an
just a
exp
smaller.
I could call it a single family trust.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, when you sell raw land, it's not law subject to Dodd-Frank. You realize that, right?
Well, there is a house on it, kind of needs to be torn down, and the person that's buying it may try to use that structure and build upon it, but really,
Okay, well, then it's not really a land deal.
no, not raw land.
no, not really.
Okay. All right, so I'm just telling you, it's what we've done for years. It's what if Jeff Watson, attorney, would do it, he'd put it in a land trust and sell it in a land trust. That's what him and Walter and all these guys like to do, and it's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I've done tens of thousands of these and never owned them in a land trust.
Okay.
So it's not a high risk in my layman's opinion.
Okay, that's what I need to know.
Great question.
Thank you.
All right, good luck to you.
Thanks.
All right, Mr. Matt, what's left?
Right, one more. We have Frederick or Fred. Let me go ahead, and I know you had kind of talked about this. This is basically kind of going as far as a playbook, and I know you'd said you want to kind of talk about it. So I'll let him come on, and y'all have a quick discussion about this. So Fred, go ahead.
Hey, Eddie.
What's up, buddy?
Oh, I'm just kind of trying to build a business, I guess. I'm trying to figure out what of all these resources you guys got on your website have value in putting together a marketing
All of them have value.
plan. Which of them have the highest value, I guess, is the question.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a different question.
So you guys have all these postcards. Have you got response rates on the postcards that you're willing to share? Is there a sort of canned plan for a direct mail campaign, or how do we decide what to use and how to modify it?
You're doing a direct mail campaign to mail to people that own a seller finance note.
Well, that would be one idea, yeah.
No, that's specifically the idea. Okay, I don't want to like I say that's one idea because that's a horse of a different color.
Okay, let's go with that specific idea.
All right, so I've dropped 5 million pieces of mail. I've done it all. I would tell you that postcards for buying seller finance notes suck.
Okay, I won't have it.
I haven't dropped a postcard in probably 10 years. So I'd tell you that postcards don't work. Greeting cards, number 10 envelopes, all those things have been by far the most proven. And anything that is a sample mail piece that is part of that program is something that we've done a lot. And they are professionally copywritten and tweaked. Follow up, listen to me now. Follow up, like Jackie's guy that has the note,
Right.
the lawyer guy that we talked about tonight, and her doing a postcard to him every couple of months after she talks to him is completely different as than what we call an initial call generator.
Okay. So
Let me tell you something you need to go watch. Okay?
yeah.
Go to your own demand Rich Rewards, and there is a piece, there is a taped piece in there that's on part of your own demand that is for direct mail marketing. Okay? I mean, there's no point in me just repeating it all tonight because, to be honest with you, you'd need to probably watch it a couple of times.
Right.
Right behind that is the negotiation and all that stuff. So, like, this is all stuff that I spent years and years and years doing. And that's why I was sort of razzing you a little bit tonight. It's like, this ain't no hobby with me. I've been doing this a long time. And
I don't want
every mail piece I got is very well tested. Now, if you were going to use direct mail for some other purpose, then all of a sudden the copy that was very, you know, craftily written for that purpose may not have the same benefit. That's why I was asking you the question I was asking you.
Yeah.
Okay. So as far as like buying seller finance notes and that kind of thing, you know, the mail pieces and stuff we have are very, very good. You know, what's the best? Be honest with you, probably the fortune teller greeting card. But now, but some of the other mail pieces got really good response rates.
So it looked like the fortune teller deal, you've really got a program outlined in all of those PDFs. But I'm just wondering, you know, what is sort of a optimum dollar investment? How many times are you mailing? What are you mailing at what points on the calendar?
You need to go watch the training.
Okay.
Because I lay all that out really clearly. And I'm not being obstinate with you. I'm just saying you need to hear it more than once, and I'm very clear about all that. And there is a booklet in there that talks about doing it. So generally speaking, with direct mail, you know, you can mail somebody once every quarter for up to a year and a half or 2 years. Okay. The mail house that you get the names from, seller data, is, you know, by far and away the best mail house for this process.
Okay.
So, you know, so this was something that I don't necessarily talk about as much on the call, but it's all available to you guys, and it's like, I mean, we did it for a very long time. And to be honest with you, we just internally right now, we're spinning so many plates, we can't really do direct mail. But I love you guys, you doing direct mail. And the guys that have really jumped out there and done it and will hammer it, here's what I'm going to tell you about direct mail, okay? Direct mail is a science. We've already figured out the science. The negotiation is an art. The only way we're going to get the negotiation down is beat it up like we did tonight with Jackie, and you've heard me do with Dave Fernacki, and there's just no other way around it. And nobody's going to get this the first time, and it's not necessarily – I've never met anybody yet that just – it was just all natural thinking. And that's where we just got to get on the call and talk through it.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing you got to do is make your phone ring.
Right. What would you suggest as a realistic budget?
Oh, if you don't drop 1,500 pieces of mail, you're probably burning. You know, you might. You know, just you're probably not giving yourself any chance.
So that
1,500 to 2,000 pieces. You know, and you don't have to drop them all at once, but you don't like wait 6 months to drop them. Maybe you drop 1,500 pieces over 6 weeks or two or a month.
So that, if I multiply that outright, that's something like $1,500 a quarter times four quarters a year, $6,000 a year.
Yeah, you that's probably not enough. You're trying to get your phone to ring enough so you can practice taking some calls.
Right.
You know, if Matt were going to start taking calls, you know, and really work the direct mail piece, and I was going to keep him busy, I'd be sending, you know, 4,000 to 6,000, 8,000 pieces a month. Now, I mean, he'd be busy, but that's what I would do.
Maybe I can hire Matt.
Well, I ain't taught him how to negotiate yet. he ain't ready.
He's from me, so I won't leave. Yeah.
So, are you saying? You're saying 1,500 a quarter is not enough. Are you saying 3,000 a quarter? Are you saying somewhere between those?
What I'm trying to give you is a working plan to start.
Right.
To go practice enough to where you're ready to make your phone ring more.
Right, okay.
Okay, in other words, if I had you go spend $4,000 and drop 4,000 pieces of mail in the first month, you would burn too many leads because you just it's you're not ready for it yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I like to get on the call and talk through this stuff. Just like I did with Jackie tonight. Because that's the only way I've ever taught anybody how to go do it is to get enough calls that they can practice, and hopefully you make enough to make some money, right? I'm not saying you're just doing it to go burn money out in the parking lot. But down the road, if you say you want to try to build a business around it, well, that you're not dropping enough mail. You're not dropping enough mail for the level of impact you're going to want to get.
Right, okay.
Mail pieces, like these mail pieces will probably produce about 1.5% response rate. Average financial services mail pieces produce about 0.5% response rate. So if you drop 1,000 pieces of mail, you get 15 calls.
And that's the cost of the education, practicing on the calls.
Right? We're gonna try to buy one. I'm not telling you we're not gonna try to buy one. I think Jackie's got a live wire.
Yeah.
I think Jackie will stay hooked on this deal, and I think she will. She's a very determined person. I think Jackie's got a deal out of this. I really do. But, you know, like, I'm seasoned enough to know that, you know, like, me trying to – you know, pick the deal that I think is going to close up front. You know, that's like me picking the winner of the Super Bowl in the preseason.
Right.
You know, and so you just got to go play the hand out with all of them and see where it's going to land. It's very interesting, you know, like she had one with this one with an estate, and it's an attorney, and that's kind of good and bad, you know. He don't want to fool with $300 a month, right?
Right.
And that could be good, or it's kind of bad. He's got like a big ego, and he don't want to take a discount because he thinks his riches are too big for that kind of thing. So I don't know what the guy'll do. I like the fact that it's in a state because he didn't have any skin in the game.
Sure.
So do you see what I'm saying? Though it's kind of like. You do the mail pieces and you work the calls and then come back and let's mash through them. And, you know, you get 15 calls, there's a seller in it. Is there a seller in it in the first 2 weeks? I don't know about that. There's a seller in it somewhere.
As we think about a business plan, what are the resources for that? You mentioned the fortune teller direct mail program. Do you have something similar, or who do we talk to in deciding, you know, how much effort do we put in non-performing, performing, how do we market partials, all of that kind of thing?
That's what these liaison calls are about with Zarina.
Okay.
You know, here's what I'm trying to do, okay? Every real estate guru out there has a coaching program, and the coach has no deep life experience, right? Well, your coaches on these calls have deep life experience. It's just you can't afford us one-on-one. I'm not being a smart aleck. Nobody could, because I'd have to charge you crazy money. So the way we do it is I'm trying to position what you're bringing back to the call so that you guys are asking us relevant stuff that's the right things to cover on these calls. There is one in 25 questions we see that is inappropriate for a public question. And if it is, we just pull it offline.
I get that.
And so the value in that is, you know, when we cover the question with a student, then everybody else gets the benefit of it. So, yeah, dialing that down with a little bit is what we're trying to do with the liaison call. So we're kind of helping you guys hone in on kind of how you're positioning the question or whatever. So there's obviously the help desk, and then obviously there's the liaison calls. The whole goal that I'm telling Kevin and Zarina and whoever works on that side is let's try to get it to where we put it back on the webinars, because that's where everybody gets the benefit of it. So, what percentage of your time is performing and non-performing is probably the most relevant to your background and where you are financially. Mm-hmm. Most people, it's easier for them to buy a performing note to start out than a non-performing note. But I've got students, I've got titanium and diamond students that have never bought a performing note. Never. Every one they've ever bought has been non-performing. And they love it. They're thrilled. So I'm like, so I don't want to tell somebody, well, you got to go buy a performing note first, because I've got students that go, well, I've never done it, and I've done 30 notes. It's kind of a personality thing to some degree, right? You got to kind of read your DNA and what you're comfortable with, and also kind of your, you know, what your resources are.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
I really think this partial is a wonderful product, and I think, you know, the extent to which we understand the customer psychology of people who are buying those better, you know, the more effective we're going to be at selling it. It seems to me that if you have a performing note in hand that you can carve up into, you know, a variety of different partials, that makes more of a compelling call to action for an investor, you know, today rather than at some point in the future. Am I thinking that through correctly?
It's always easier to sell a performing note than a non-performing, even if the yield is less to the investor.
How often I know this is probably not really even answerable, but do people like the partials better than a good performing note because they don't have to do the work, or, you know, kind of, how's that?
Passive investors like partials because you own the back end of the note, and they think if something goes wrong, you're going to be there to help them. And that they're thinking that because that's probably really what's going to happen. You can't guarantee it if you're selling it in a retirement account. So I'm not saying it's an absolute guarantee, because you can't say that. But you can certainly say that you have residual interest. And it's way easier for Martha to sell part of a note than all of a note. Because they're like, well, Martha owns the back end. I like that deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate the pointers.
Yes, sir, brother. See you soon. Matthew?
Yes, sir.
What happened to my plan? We were going to be off in an hour.
I was wondering, but I guess we just got too much. We just had too much good content, so at least we're not 2 hours.
Yeah. All right, so... Sorry, I know we've left some people standing tonight, but we didn't get the questions in early, and that is what happens when you send them in late. Because there does become a priority to it, and it's 9:30, and everybody gets particularly our friends on the East Coast, they get tired of hanging out with us. What else, Matt?
Well, the only thing, someone asked where they can find the rent facts, just go to the, and I sent that out to, it should be on the board, the email, or the, where you can go to. Other thing is, we do have something coming out tomorrow. I don't know if you want to make a point of that. And also,
yeah, tell them.
Tomorrow after the non-performing call, the most up-to-date list of assets that we have available are going to be coming out. So these are the assets that we sent out to the titanium list first, or students first, and now everyone else will be able to make a crack at them. So those will be coming out after tomorrow's non-performing call. So after we finish there, it should be up within 30, 40 minutes. We'll have it up right after the call. Second thing is that November or the 11th, so here in the next 3 days, the Hog Hunt webinar is going to go off for those who want to hear more about it. And everyone who sent in their information, I am sending that to everybody tonight after I get off the call, because I think that's long enough. So we have a list of people who want to hear about it too. So anything I'm missing? Or
I know that Martha is going to have her ladies mastermind. So the Hog Hunt, I think everybody knows this. The Hog Hunt's a charity deal. It's just like, if that suits you, we've sent you an invitation, fine. You can send Matt an invitation. Otherwise, matt@noteschool.com, and he'll send you an invite. The webinar, I think, is Thursday for that. Am I saying that right, Matt?
I believe the 11th, yes. So today's the 8th. So.
And so, but that's just, it's a charity deal. It's super fun, and the food's great, and you can bring your a guest, a spouse, whatever. It's not free for them to come, but it's a very adjusted price. The accommodations are not free, but it's really fun. And so we got a cool deal, and we'll tell you the story about it if it's something you like to consider. Martha's Ladies Mastermind is not part of the mentor program either, and it's just a ladies deal that she's done before, and people had a great time and they loved it, and that sounds interesting to you. You can email Matt on the Ladies Mastermind, and we'll make sure you're included in the email if you for some reason are not. So those are outside of the regular mentor program. Sometimes we do it for charity, and sometimes we do it to help support what we do for charity, and so that's kind of what we do. So it's like we've donated a lot of things to the facilities and things so we can do these cool events, and sometimes we kind of go and catch up and pay for the facilities, and sometimes we just donate 100% of the money to it, and we donate all of our resources. So it works out. Anyway, either one of those, the Ladies Mastermind and the Hog Hunt. Matt, you're probably not going to get a dual invite there where somebody wants to go to the Hog Hunt and the Martha's Ladies Mastermind.
Well, believe it or not, I've got a response of the husband wants to go to the Hog Hunt and the wife wants to go to the
Ladies. That's believable. And by the way, if you do want to bring your wife to the Hog Hunt, we do have an accommodation for them, and it's fun, and we'll talk about Thursday and stuff. Hog Hunt's awesome. Fun. If it's not your thing, and I get that, it's not for a lot of people, then we have other things that we can do. Bob and I will be doing a charity mastermind a little later, and 100% of those proceeds will go to the Child Welfare Board. So we are going to have the Summer Summit in June, and we are going to have a rock star instructor that is going to come do an event, and all the money is going to go to the Ladies Master, not to the Ladies Mastermind, to the Child Welfare Board. And it'll be affordable, a lot more affordable than last year, $250 for a guest, and $200 for the primary, and $250 for the primary, and $200 for the guest. And the guy that is going to come teach it is named Dykes Botterford, and he is a guy that Jeff Watson and Walter Wolford and a whole lot of people that you guys have learned to really respect their high knowledge. They have trained a lot under him. This guy's really smart. I know him super well. And he is going to talk about entities and tax treatment and different strategies within the entities. So very cool topic suggested by Jeff Watson that's been to this class many times. And he'll be doing the right before the Summer Summit, and it's in June. Titanium Mastermind is going to be in May. And you'll be getting emails and information about both those things here really quick. Anything else, Matt?
I think that's it. Only other thing is, if you're going to be on tomorrow's call, we are going to have ProTide along. So if you have some questions, they're going to be talking about vesting title issues. So,
excellent.
All right.
All right, buddy. See y'all soon.
How's it going?
Great questions tonight. Thanks.